Baron City and Takai. baronsvw.co.za.
Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
And we've lost the logo. We have to get it, but because it's Weekly World Economic Report. Where's the logo? We are back with our Weekly World Economic Report. This week, we focus on the G20 finance meeting that's coming up this weekend. President Cyril Ramaphosa goes to Switzerland for the International Labour Organization. U.S.-China trade tensions carry on elsewhere. The pound could slide to a two-year low if Mr. Boris Brexit gets into power. And, of course, back home, the rand taking a bit of a skid when the Secretary General of the ANC couldn't talk the talk. Qualitative easing? Good heavens. But online, Dr. Jason Masioka, Senior Research Fellow, University of Pretoria. Dr. Masioka, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me.
And of course, lots of things we've got to get through. I'm kind of turn things upside down, seeing that President Ramaphosa has been spoken about a lot on the show today. He's off to Switzerland and the International Labour Organization. How does that pan out for the country in terms of hopes of reviving the economy and getting things back on an even keel again?
There are no direct benefits that we might get other than profiling of the country. He does chair the annual conference of the International Labour Organization together with the Prime Minister of Sweden. And the issues really with the International Labour Organization throughout, going all the way back to from 1998 onward, it has been the question of the rights of workers. Nothing much necessarily about growth and development, but much more about social justice issues, and especially given the fourth industrial revolution. President Ramaphosa did give the keynote address, and his argument is that we need to look at ways of protecting workers' rights in the age of climate change and technological advances and so on. So the key issue here was around the question of social justice and how you get workers' rights protected amidst global changes.
Interesting stuff indeed. And of course, we've got the G20 finance meeting scheduled for this weekend. What are they going to be doing this time around? What do you think is going to be top of their menu?
This is very interesting because it's coming at a time when they have to meet and they have to talk, given what is going on around the world. Two factors guide my that argument. And the first is that the global economy is extremely vulnerable at the moment, and this is largely hitched on or linked to the trade wars that have been placed between the Americans and the Mexicans and Indians and everybody else. So they could not have a better chance to talk about this issue. But secondly, there's a broader economic debate around the question of protectionism. And with Trump's America First policy, it's very important for nations to begin looking at whether we should be openly now discussing about protectionism. If you would have talked about protecting your boundaries in the last 10 years, a lot of countries would laugh you off. At the moment, there has been serious debates and discussions on whether they should include the term protectionism in the agenda and discussion, because they do not want to offend the Americans. And somehow they've come up with just some words around trade and tariffs and so on, but totally deliberately avoiding the term protectionism. And this is a huge shift from traditionally these forums, they argue for trade, and trade has been seen as a very critical tool for development, as has aid, giving of aid to developing countries. It has been seen as an opportunity, but trade more recently has overtaken aid as a much more effective tool, because it's not a handout. You are developing skills, you are developing systems in the target countries and so on. So they are totally avoiding this whole terminology of protectionism. And it's going to be very interesting how this is going. This is a first, really, as far as economic discourse is concerned.
I did myself, in fact, I tortured myself the other day. I sat and I actually listened to a full interview of President Donald Trump on Fox News, which I'm sure you agree with me can be quite painful. What is very interesting from this interview, apart from the fact he only praised himself six times, was that on the U.S. first policy, what came out of the interview was he seemed to think that everybody, that the U.S. was paying everybody else's bills. That was the first thing. The second thing, he was basically said in as many words that the Chinese were being spoilt by the fact that they didn't have these tariffs, et cetera, et cetera. What concerned me was the simple terminology that he was using, and it was quite clear that when it comes to economics, this poor man actually doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, just to add on that, it's interesting, and this is probably just outside the debate of economics, but I mean, he tweeted 2 days ago about Mars being part of the moon, and you know, this has been a whole debate about does really the president has, there's even been, there's a book that came out by Omarosa, one of his advisors, who suggested that perhaps there need to be some serious discussion about whether the president is actually needing some mental checkup. So there has been that debate openly and publicly, and he's denied that. But coming back to the question of economics, the reality is that there are very few economists, if any, who will sit down and tell you that the idea of America first, and America has grown out of being inclusive and trading with the rest of the world and competing with the rest of the world. That is how Europe, that is how America has grown. That's how China itself has grown, because China has been extremely competitive in terms of exporting manufactured products. So there is no economy that has ever grown, and not least to mention that this is the 21st century in an era of technological advances. You can only be very short-sighted if you argue that you need to close your borders. Because keep in mind, you and I are using laptops, we're using computers, we can get this information, we can trade online, we can do e-commerce. The world is much more connected than the physical boundaries tend to suggest. Mm-hmm. And this is the nature of the world in the 21st century. So this, to me, is really trying to put more water on a broken bucket. If you ask me, there is no way to circumvent the connectivity that there is now. The world is a global village, and there is no going back.
And Britain seems to be suffering in a similar kind of vein, because we've got Mr. Boris Brexit Johnson, reports coming in that the British pound will take a hammering if he gets into the seat of the Prime Minister, if he goes to 10 Downing Street.
He has been hauled into court for misleading those who voted to exit, suggesting that there's a lot of money that they could save. But when they actually sat down and calculated the figures, they found out that the figures were extremely inflated. And so he is in court defending that argument that he was making. But the reality is that if we are going to have a Boris Johnson in the driving seat of the UK economy, which is quite large and significant, and by the way, quite significant for South Africa, especially Cape Town, the Capetonians export most of potatoes and so on to the UK. So somehow there are implications. But if we are going to have another Trump sitting on the driving seat and making the same or doing the same wrecking ball kind of move that we are seeing with the Americans now, then we will have more double tragedy. If we think that we are in serious trouble now, we might be in double serious trouble. So that is quite a concern for anybody who is interested in economics.
And talking about trouble, Mr. Ace Magashule, not understanding the difference between quantitative easing and qualitative easing, it tells me that he's financially illiterate. But boy, what a lot of damage he has done.
Yeah, I am very surprised that they let him, whoever advises him. This is at this particular moment in time in South Africa, and especially given that the GDP figures of the first quarter just came out and demonstrated that we are not doing well at all. The worst thing you can do is to try and scare markets and begin to suggest that there is policy inconsistency or policy uncertainty. The reality is that NASREC, they did take the decision or the resolution to nationalize the Reserve Bank. But the question always on leadership and strategy is the timing and the sequencing. These are not discussions that you can have when the economy is almost heading to a recession. And as we've seen, just that statement alone wiped off several billions from the share market. And it took 2 days for the president to step in, but the damage has already been done. And so that kind of inconsistency is concerning. I have to underscore the fact that, in my view, we have now a tussle of the state versus the ANC. And what President Zuma did, he merged the two. So we were no longer sure where policy direction was coming from. Traditionally and constitutionally, the state is a separate entity. And the former president, Mbeki, had that very clear. He had the government to run. The government gave direction of policy, and you had the ANC running politics on the background. President Zuma, we saw Gwede Mantashe, he was busy giving policy instructions on how the country is supposed to be run. And that seems to be the same trajectory or trend that Asim Agashule is picking up. Now, Ramaphosa is trying to redivide again the state and the ANC, and that is going to be an uphill task. And as you can see, you still have now this sense of policy direction coming from Luthuli House, which should not be. And I hope that they can try and resolve this kind of double mix.
Something very clever occurred, although Mr. Mabe certainly tried to kick against the tin on this one, that almost immediately we saw a realignment of communication lines, that apparently all the communication lines via Luthuli House now have to go via the presidency. That to me seemed very significant.
And that's important, because I think what the president is trying to do, as I've said, is to try and divide and to ensure that when you talk about policy, you affect the economy. When you talk about policy direction and so on, it has to be from the union buildings. And I think that is what the president is trying to do, especially around this time when the economy is so vulnerable. In fact, some economists are predicting that, I'm not that pessimistic myself, but there are several economists who are suggesting that we are likely to be heading to a recession just 2 years after the last one. And so the worst mistake that we can do is to have this double communication. So I think the president is trying to centralize, but keep in mind that we've been here before. And one of the reasons why President Mbeki was booted out was because he was accused of centralizing power. Uh-huh. But he wasn't, in my view, really centralizing power. He was running the state as a constitutional organ, which is totally separate from the ANC. Keep in mind that the ANC can still collapse, and the country can still remain. But the moment that you have the state collapsing, you cannot have a country and claim, you cannot claim that you have a country when the state collapses. So that division needs to be very clear. And I think President Ramaphosa is trying to redivide that line. I hope that he's aware that, you know, it's not going to be accepted by everybody, and that might be, that might wage another warfare with people trying to control this from the Luthuli House. So again, that is something to keep an eye on.
Dr. Jason Masioka, Senior Research Fellow, University of Pretoria. As always, great to be chatting again, and we'll do it same time next week.
Thank you so much, Sapik, for having me, and thank you for...